Hello and welcome to Talent Takes Time, conversations with women who've achieved success in sports journalism and presenting and are here to share with you the tales of their journeys, the things they would tell their younger selves and the struggles they still encounter, the brutal truth of this wonderful industry. In this episode, I'm chatting with Rebecca Lowe, one of the many great presenting talents we lost from the UK after Rebecca moved stateside to host Premier League football for NBC Sports. More on her job in a moment, but Rebecca and I spent years together as touchline reporters in the early days when there were only one or two of us at a game. We pick up the conversation there.
I'm really good, Ali. It's so lovely to see you. I was remembering back when you got in touch to all those days. I mean, just all those days of you and I just being freezing cold, sidelines, tunnels, trying to eke out quotes and just... Those were the really, I mean, you know, things aren't like super easy now, but those were the, I think those were really hard days, tough job, tough times, actually.
They were. And you know, I'm actually really sad thinking back to it because we didn't actually talk to each other as much as I wish we should. We were both so busy. We were both going about our jobs. We were both probably a little bit intimidated by the fact that it was a massively male-dominated environment. And we were trying to look professional and do the best jobs we could. But, you know, if we'd got to know each other as well as we know each other now, I think perhaps things might have been a bit easier.
You know what? I couldn't agree with you more because I think there's two things there. One, I think the male-dominated world, and if you and I were in the corner, like, chatting, it would have, I think it would have looked... like you say, almost unprofessional, which it wouldn't have been at all.
It would have looked like a gossip club, wouldn't it?
Yeah. Totally. So I think I was always aware of that because you're always aware of the perception of being that female in that male environment. And also I think even then, it was a while ago now, I mean, say 10 years ago, then I think there wasn't the sort of bond that I feel like women have now in the industry, because now, I mean, you and I were fairly rare, but like now there's so many more jobs. I mean, in this country for sure, but in the UK, I mean, it's changed since I left. I cannot believe the amount of women in football, which is amazing. So it just kind of lowers the stress levels, I think, on everybody. And has allowed more of a sisterhood to develop, which couldn't develop because we were all in such crazy competition and it just wasn't fair. I didn't like that at all. I totally agree.
I didn't enjoy that environment. And I think we were all just trying to get on with it, doing the best job we could. And there was no mentoring. I didn't feel that there was anyone who wanted you to succeed other than yourself. And totally. I think now it's very different, which it feels much more nurturing.
It was true. There was jealousy, competition and comparison as we were on our own. Rebecca speaks of those tough early years as she's now in a studio anchoring football coverage. And although my career has gone that way too, I'm also still pitch side reporting, but it's a completely different scene these days. Just recently, I took a picture at Stamford Bridge where there were 5 female reporters at one game. It was more than the men in terms of on-camera talent. For anyone who wants to talk about box ticking, I can tell you that all of them have been doing this job for over a decade and have earned their right to be there. Since Rebecca has been doing this job for such a long time, I wanted to speak to her about the work that she's put in and the seeds that she sowed early on.
I think it's all about that, actually. I think the way you begin your career, it's kind of how we do something is how we do everything. And how you start your career is how you're going to be doing your career in 20 years. I mean, I still sit here, Ali, and I go on air on NBC having done way too much prep. And that is because, and I'm sure you're the same, is because back nearly 20 years ago when I first started with the BBC, I did way too much prep. But what it allowed me was a chance to know that I had a safety net if something went wrong, if I needed it. Because I don't know about you, but I was always so terrified of, at the beginning, being found out. Like, what on earth am I doing? Someone's going to discover that this person should not be where she is. So if I did all the prep that I could possibly do, then I would never get found out, that I just had no quite idea what I was doing. So that really puts you with some confidence. Yeah. And it also educates you because... it continues to improve you. So the more work I did, the more articles I read, the more newspapers I read, the more I exposed myself to the mass media, actually the better I got. And even now, it's funny because we get sent huge amounts of articles every night by our research team on NBC. And if I run out of time, as us working mums sometimes do, and I don't get to those articles, when I go on air, I don't quite feel complete. And and whether or not those articles directly impact my topics of chat or not, there's something about and it doesn't happen often, but if I don't get round to them, I feel incomplete. So my sort of ideas on what on sowing the seed is start your career how you need it to be and how it has to be 20 years down the line, 40 years down the line.
This is something I can relate to. It's classic imposter syndrome. But if you throw hard work at fear, that terror of messing up begins to disappear. I felt exactly the same way, and I'm sure I worked harder than most men would feel they had to, but I felt there simply could not be a single gap in my knowledge. If there were, it would be unacceptable. Most days run smoothly, but in the event of having to ad lib for an hour because rain called off the match, or having to step into someone else's role because they're sick, or commentate on the game because the comms feed has gone down, that is when your prep and your work ethic will shine. It happened to Rebecca one day in 2012. Fabrice Muamba, then of Bolton Wanderers, suddenly and unexpectedly collapsed with a heart attack during an FA Cup game against Tottenham Hotspur at White Hart Lane. And it put Rebecca's name into the spotlight for how she dealt with the situation.
Well, it was, you can't prep for that, right? So, but what happened was, because I felt so okay with everything about the game and I knew all about Kevin Keegan and John Barnes who were with me, and like I kind of felt so in control, when something, and there's going to be at least one thing in everyone's career that's going to completely come out of left field and be like, oh my goodness, I never expected this to happen. As hard as that moment was, I felt in control because I knew everything about Muamba because I'd done my, I almost knew who his family was. And that there is a perfect example of if you don't do your prep and I just decided to wing it that day, can you imagine? I could have really, really made huge errors, and that is not a time to make errors. So it's a perfect learning curve, actually, a perfect learning example. That
I think a lot of the time you're almost preparing for the 1% of when it goes wrong, right? Okay. And for example, if a pundit gets something wrong, you will know and be able to correct them. That it's those little situations I kind of think. And, you know, sometimes I kind of think, I come off air and I think, wow, all that prep wasted. But it's obviously in the memory bank. And yeah, I think you told a perfect example.
One key thing about doing this job, and in fact, working in many careers, is that you often feel out of your comfort zone. There's a huge embarrassment factor that you have to get over. Clearly, you're talking to people live in a situation that does not always feel natural.
I'm going to remind you of something. All those years ago, I always remember watching you, obviously live presenting Premier League games, and you used to have to walk out of the tunnel with the players behind you. I don't know if anyone remembers this, but the players could hear exactly what you were saying about them. And I remember at the time thinking, that is a tough job. I would not fancy that. But I always think things like that, being out of your comfort zone, almost being made to sort of do something that's quite embarrassing, is always going to come back to help you later. Would you agree? Has it?
I think it has, because it's forced me that I did it for 4 years, as you know, you were there. And I don't think by the end I was as embarrassed as I was at the beginning. And therefore I got strengthened by it. But at the beginning, and for a number of those 4 years, oh my God, it makes me want to cry thinking about how hard it was.
It's so hard.
It was so hard because, like you just said, like talking about the players who are literally standing right here, I mean, and usually the captain. So the number of times at Chelsea, I'd be standing next to John Terry and next to the captain of whoever they were playing, talking about, well, you know, the Chelsea defence have let in 10 goals in the last 3 games. And John Terry's about to walk out to play this game live on TV, and he's looking at me like, thanks a bunch, just reminding the whole audience that. And then I had to get the ball from the referee, and it was incredibly difficult. It was my most uncomfortable situation I've ever had. It's funny you remembered it because, yes, that's exactly, you probably looked at me and that's exactly how I was feeling, like super uncomfortable. I actually went to the bosses and asked if I could not do it anymore after a little time.
I loved it because it was so unique. And actually, I think, you know, a lot of people talk about, trying to do things differently in this world because you need to have a unique selling point or whatever it is. And that was yours, to be fair. You were the only person that did that. It stood out. I thought it was brilliant. But at the same time, I could see as a fellow professional doing the same job, how tough that was.
And I could never think it was brilliant. Looking back now, you're right. I never thought about it like that. Yeah, I suppose that was really unique. But when I was doing it and whenever I watched my shows back after the weekend was finished, I would always spool through that bit because I never thought I had anything. I always felt it was a bit slightly, a bit of a gesture, and it just a little bit, I think I just blocked it out. It was horrible. And then the abuse I got, by the way, from that exact thing on Twitter is why I came off Twitter. So I was on Twitter in about, 2010. I think I started Twitter and I lasted 3 months because it coincided with the beginning of the second year of ESPN. And after every single tunnel hit that I did, oh, I mean, you know, you've had them.
Yeah.
So bad and so brutal and so personal and so hideous that I had to come off Twitter. So actually, I blame that.
So unfair, isn't it? It's like you were just doing your job, basically.
I know.
And okay, well, let's talk about that then. Things like the Twitter trolls, the rejection, you know, girls like us didn't always necessarily have a really tough skin, you know, and sometimes we still don't, but it is part and parcel of the job, but not really something that we asked for. We're just trying to present the show, trying to go about our jobs. But do you feel that there are any of those things that actually kind of came back to help you in the end?
I think that when you and I started in this world, we almost didn't question what we had to put up with. I think women and younger girls now who go into our world question it more. And so, no, you know, I've seen on Twitter women saying, no, I'm not okay with this, and calling these people out. I think you and I and the women in our generation, I just got on with it thinking, well, this is what women have to, this was way before the Me Too movement, the women in, like, it was so long ago that we didn't, unfortunately, question the world, because we knew if we questioned the world wouldn't be okay with that. Yeah. Now, if you question the world's fine. So I think that in a way that was really sad, some of the stuff that we've had to put up with, really sad. But part of me does think I've toughened up because I had to go through that and I had to suck it all up for all those years and never have anyone to talk to and no one really cared. So that's, I suppose, helped. But I wouldn't say it's helped. I would rather it was the other way around. I'd rather I'd had help with that, because now I don't think I have got a tough skin. Even now, I still, and I don't think any of us have, as much as we can try and give that impression that we are rhinoceroses. and we have to sometimes give that impression, I think.
Yeah.
Wow, if I could meet somebody who is like that, female, and I would love to learn from them, because I'm certainly not. And so I'm not sure that it's definitely helped me a little bit over time, what we had to go through, but not as much as maybe I'd like it to have done. It's still a really rotten industry.
It is horrible. And the way I often say it is, we never listen to the good stuff. Like, I will go and read a bunch of stuff that people have put on social media, and there might be like a whole load of compliments, but the one thing I think about when I'm going to bed that night is the one evil thing. Just kind of niggles, goes around your brain.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree more. And which is so human and also so crazy, but I totally agree with you on that.
Here's a perfect example of what Rebecca and I were just discussing. When I voted for Jordan Henderson as Football Writers Association Player of the Year in the year that he won, here are some of the tweets that I received. Do you even watch football? Just shows how little you know about football. You are embarrassing. Back to the kitchen, you clueless human. That's why football is a men's sport. You're actually deluded. It shows you don't actually watch football. You're racist. These were some of the hundreds of tweets I received. I took out the swearing and misogynistic references. There were many. And then someone defended me. Professional journalist who seems to have done her research and really follows the game, has huge track record in her job, writes an article about why she chose a player for Player of the Year and gets abused, questioned and ridiculed. What's wrong with people? But which of those comments do you think stuck? We'll be back on Talent Takes Time after this short break. Welcome back to Talent Takes Time and my conversation with Rebecca Lowe of NBC Sports. Before the break, Rebecca explained how these tunnel walks had forced her off social media. It's so sad that this experience took her off Twitter, but I can imagine the kind of comments she would have been receiving. And sometimes when it's a barrage like that every week, it's exhausting and it's easier to just get out. The aimless abuse was one thing, but Rebecca went on to speak about the really delicate subject of comparisons.
I don't understand why women get compared to other women, but men don't get compared to other men. So this is part of
I never thought of that. It's a good point.
Yeah. All the time. You know, I have it all the time. People send me messages on Instagram about, like, oh, I think you're just like this person, or better than this person, or worse than this person, or all the time. And yet there's no way in hell these people contact the male presenters and say, oh, you know, you're just like this person and I don't think you're as good as them, or whatever it is. And I think it goes back to what I said at the beginning, which is when we started in the early 2000s, there were so few jobs for us that we were a rarity. And therefore we were like this like specimen. And so there was like Alison Bender and Rebecca Lowe and like a couple of others. And then it was like, right, well then they're so rare. It's like, let's put them up there and then like, let's compare them because there's no one else to talk about. Now there's so many women that doesn't need to happen. But I still feel like it happens. I still feel like women are compared to other women, whether it's looks, ability, whatever, and it doesn't happen with men. And I don't know when that's going to end, but that bothers me a lot, because it's like going back to school, and I hate it.
There's a lot of people out there who are trying to get into broadcast journalism, into all kinds of journalism. It's obviously a ridiculous time at the moment with the pandemic, and nobody knows quite where this industry is headed. But what would be the biggest piece of advice you could give someone right now?
I mean, it's not unique. It's not, this is sort of advice I tell people, but I'm sure everyone's heard it, but I really mean it. You have to have no ego. And what I mean by that is you have to understand that when you start in this business, you have to be at the bottom, and you have to be okay with that. And you have to work for free, and you have to find a way. And, you know, I found a way of, I had to work for free at the beginning, and then I found a way of just never not turning up and making sure I finally got a paid shift. And you have to understand that making tea, I mean, I made tea at TalkSport for the presenters, and now I go on TalkSport as a guest, as like a football expert. And you think, God, that's amazing. But I understand everything about the industry, and I understand that the ladder has to be climbed, and it doesn't always look like this. That's the other thing, Ali, like, oh, I'll do this job, then I'll do this job. No. I did this job, then I came down and did Satanta Sports, for example, which was much lower profile, and then it went bust. And then I did ESPN, but then I did, like, within ESPN, I kind of came down again. And you just have to know that your path is going to be a few lefts, a few rights, a few ups, a few downs, a few shut doors, push them open. And if you've got to start and be happy to start with nothing, lose out on every wedding, every christening, every hen weekend. You're not going to go to any of them if you want to work in sports broadcasting. You better know that now. Know the sacrifices, and know it's going to be tough, but know that in the end, if you keep on that path and you keep knowing that it's not going to be smooth, but you keep on this bumpy path, you will get there, because that will show your perseverance. It's just never going to be smooth. It's just not ever going to be smooth, ever.
This is one of my favourite pieces of advice, because it couldn't be more true. Your career path is rarely a straight line. In my own career, some of the best gigs I've ever had were at the start. I worked for one of the biggest football clubs in the world, Real Madrid. I launched their television channel, and I had stylist, a clothing allowance, makeup artist, and even someone who cut my hair for free. I was treated like a celeb, with someone powdering my nose before appearances. 10 years later, and I'll be lucky if I have someone to point a camera at me at times, but this is the industry. It goes up and down and weaves in and out. You have to believe in the process and understand all your experiences are your career. I wish someone had told me that at the start.
Got to talk about the mum career juggle. What's the hardest thing you found about it? And what's perhaps, do you have any tips that make it easier?
Oh my gosh, Ali. I mean, this could be a whole podcast. The hardest thing I find about it is when I come home. So I fly from California to the East Coast, to Connecticut, every weekend. I usually leave on a Friday morning, fly there, do my shows, come back on a Sunday night. So I'm kind of a stay-at-home mum from Sunday night through to Friday morning, which is wonderful. The problem is I feel like I have so much to make up. So on a Monday morning, I feel like I need to do everything with my kid all week. And then I get to the end of the week and I've not rested at all. And then I get on a plane again and I fly to the East Coast and I do three massive shows and I come back and do the whole thing again, because it's, you feel guilty. And it's very difficult. My husband hears me say it every week and he doesn't understand it. He's like, yeah, but you're at home so much and you have, you know, you're Teddy, your little boy will love to see you working. He's not going to feel that you've got to stop with the guilt, but it's literally impossible to stop with the guilt no matter what you do. But equally, I don't want to be a stay at home mum as much as sometimes dream about that. I know that that's just not who I am, but I don't have the answers. I think you just have to muddle along as best you can. And you know what I really like is on Instagram, there's a real network of supportive working mums and stay-at-home mums, mums that don't judge. And I find I just find the judging side of everything in life just overwhelming sometimes, but especially the mum judgy. I find that, and I've had it, you know, people saying to me, oh, like you go away from your son for 2 nights a week. Oh, you know, and you're thinking, I'm not pressuring you on me or my life.
Oh, the grief I got for going to the World Cup was just cruel. But, you know, but you're right. I think it's really important, actually, to go and filter your social media and actually to follow people that make you feel good about yourself. And there's some brilliant, actually, a few posts ago, I just posted a couple of sites that I absolutely love for exactly that, like inspiring each other and just kind of making us feel good about what we're doing rather than bad. So there are accounts out there.
Totally. And final, absolutely agree. Find them, curate your little network. And final point is, just gives everyone out there, I mean, people are watching this, I'm sure, understand already. But when I went to the Olympic Games 3.5 months after I had my kid, I had so many questions when I was there. Like, oh, your baby's 3.5 months. Oh, wow. Like, oh, you've chosen to come out. Like all this kind of slightly judgy, passive aggressive stuff. My husband went to England when my kid was 2 for 4.5 months. Okay. I went for 3 weeks. He went for 4.5 months. I didn't have a single, for work, I didn't have a single person say to me, your husband's leaving you and your kid for 4.5 months. Oh, he's not a very good dad, is he? Not a single person. Imagine if I'd gone for 4.5 months, I'd have been strung up. It's just the inequality in 2020 is madness. It's madness.
Yeah. It's sad to say, but the problems still exist. There is a lot of judgment, but it's worth knowing this. Things are improving. And as Rebecca says, there are some great groups to help you feel better about these decisions you have to make. But they are decisions that many of your friends won't be making, and you need to justify them. Rebecca is a massive inspiration. The Americans have embraced her, taken her in as their own, and I can understand why Rebecca has chosen to stay stateside. When I presented for ESPN in America, I had the same feeling of acceptance. I was a credible voice of football, finally, and I hadn't felt that way in the UK. I really hope it's something we can do better in England, or sadly, we'll continue to lose some of our top talent. Thanks so much for joining us on the 3 T's. Talent Takes Time. See you next time. Talent Takes Time is presented by me, Alison Bender. The series producer is Gary Hayes, and Matt Alabaster has produced all our artwork. Taylor Hayes mixed this episode and also composed our music. If you'd like to know more about my career in the media, you can follow me on Instagram, Twitter and TikTok at AliBenderTV. You can also sign up to my website, alisonbender.com, for more information on getting into the media industry. This has been a production for the Highway 61 Network.